We are worshiping Christ as we study together Ecclesiastes, and we're going to do something I haven't done yet. We're going to cover a whole chapter tonight, and so I will try to keep moving along and hopefully not get bogged down. But this book has just been so encouraging to me, and it is definitely one of my favorite books in the Old Testament, without doubt. And it's a biblical philosophy of life. Tonight we're in Ecclesiastes chapter 6, this wonderful book that has as a theme, chapter 1, verse 2, vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all this vanity in that song. I don't know if you caught it, but one of the lines we just sang was, this life is but a fleeting breath. Did you maybe think of that picture? That's the word hevel. That's the word vanity. That's our life. It's just a breath, right? It's brief. It's sometimes hard to understand, and it's often frustrating. Now, if I asked you, what do you find frustrating in this life? What do you find difficult to wrap your minds around? No doubt many of us would have different ideas, but Solomon is actually going to bring one up for us tonight. And it begins with a brief review of chapter 3. So even though we're in chapter 6 tonight, I'm going to go back to chapter 3 real quick and remind us of this incredibly important poem. I'll just not read the whole thing, but verse 1 of chapter 3. There's an appointed time for everything, and there's a time for every event under heaven. And then Solomon goes on, a time to give birth, a time to die, plant and uproot, kill and heal, tear down and build, weep and laugh, mourn and dance, throw stones, gather stones, embrace, shun embracing, search, give it up, keep, throw it away, tear apart, sow, be silent, speak, love, hate, war, peace. And what is the key to this poem? It's not the idea that you need to know how to read the time, so you better know what time it is. It is what Solomon says, chapter 3, verse 1. There's an appointed time for everything, and the Lord is the one who appoints it. This is a poem of divine sovereignty. Whatever comes into your life, whatever comes into my life, is appointed by the sovereign hand of God. And that can be challenging. Because often we look around, and here's the question we ask. So why isn't life fair, right? I mean, if God's in charge of everything, how come there are people that love God and they seem to have nothing? And then there are people who don't worship God and they don't love God and they have so much stuff. And they seem to have everything. And we struggle with that, right? I frequently hear believers say, you know, Greg, here I am and I'm worshiping Christ and I'm trying to honor Him and look at my life. And then there's these other people and their life is so much better than mine. How could that be? Why isn't life fair? That's how we would say it in the vernacular. Theologians maybe would put it this way. The apparent inequalities of divine providence. And that's actually the heading of one of the books I've been studying. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Because when we go through life, we find this, that there are some people, and from their clothing to what they drive to where they live, they seem to have everything, right? Life is just handed to them on a golden spoon, as we would say. And then there's other people. Now, the second guy, that's supposed to be an example of poverty. And that could be challenging because it used to be true when you saw someone in torn jeans, it meant that that was poverty. Now that means they can afford expensive jeans that are pre-torn. All right. I've actually teased my wife. I have jeans that I wear out and I thought I should sell them for big money on eBay, you know, because I thought they were wore out. And okay, I'll stop. So here's an idea. Lord, if you appoint everything, how come life's not fair? How come so many people have so much nice stuff? Pause. Solomon's going to help us understand that is fallacious reasoning. There is something faulty in asking this question. Did you pick up on it? Lord, I'm following you. I don't have a lot of nice stuff. Those other people don't even know you. They have a ton of nice stuff. It's not fair. And Solomon's going to say, wait a second. Why do you assume that stuff makes you happy? See, as long as you assume that stuff makes you happy, you're going to struggle. But once you understand what Solomon wants us to understand, really, guys, it's going to be much less of a struggle. What Solomon is going to help us understand in chapter 6 is that you can't judge a book by its cover. There are people who have everything this world can offer, and they enjoy none of it because they don't know the giver of the gifts that they have. So in chapter 6, we're going to look at the whole chapter again, 12 verses, not a long chapter. I've called the title, Good Times Aren't Always Good. And if you're not already there, I hope you'll open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 6 tonight. Good times aren't always good. We're going to see a number of things tonight. Number one, we're going to see vanity. And here's the vanity. It begins in chapter 6, verses 1 and verse 2. There is an evil which I've seen under the sun. So Solomon has actually seen this. It's in this world, it's under the sun, and it's prevalent among men. Prevalent means it's common. The NIV says it weighs heavily on mankind. Both are true. You say, what is it? Verse 2. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor. Wow, what a life. So that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God has not empowered him to eat from them. For a foreigner enjoys them. This is vanity. Hevel. It doesn't make any sense. And a severe affliction. Here's a person who has everything he could want. Riches, wealth, and honor. He has all of these good things. But verse 2. He doesn't enjoy them. That's incredible. Why? Well, it says God has not empowered him to eat from them. Okay? So here's a person, middle of verse 2, that God has not empowered to eat from them. And I've mentioned this in the past. Many people think that's just a way of saying living a life, because part of our life is eating. And thus the ESV puts it, God does not give them power to enjoy them. The NIV, God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them. Here's a guy who has everything, and he enjoys none of it because he doesn't know the giver of the good gifts. And you know what makes it even worse? Look at the end of verse 2. A foreigner, and that word could just be a stranger. It doesn't have to be someone from a different country, but just somebody different than him. A foreigner or stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. This is a severe affliction. This is you and me looking at people that have everything. And in our souls, we're thinking, Lord, how can this be fair? And we don't really understand the truth that many of these people don't enjoy any of what they have. That would be such a hard thing to understand. It's havel. It's a severe affliction. I tried to think of just a simple illustration. Take a person who is financially secure and he loves good food. I put up a picture of a gourmet meal. I just pulled one off the internet. And he's able to travel, let's say to Europe, and able to go to an incredibly expensive restaurant where there's a world-renowned chef, and to be able to eat of the very best food. And yet he suffers from what is called, and see if I can pronounce this, agusia, which is a loss of the functioning of the taste buds on your tongue. What would that be like? Somebody who can enjoy the most expensive food possible, yet he doesn't have the ability to taste it. What would that be? That would be vanity. That would be a picture of people in this world who have everything. And we're tempted to think, boy, that would be nice. Yeah, it's like eating a meal without taste buds, if you think that would be nice. That's what Solomon is trying to help us understand. That's a vanity. People having it all, yet they don't enjoy it because they don't know the giver of the good gifts. You say, okay, so what is Solomon trying to help us understand? Well, that'll take us to our second point. Number one, there's a vanity, having it all yet enjoying none of it. Verse 3, there is a principle. And I'm going to take the principle, then we'll do the illustration on the next point. What's the principle? Guys, it's better not to have it than to have it and not enjoy it. Look at verse 3. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they be, and then we're going to come back to that in the next point. I want to focus on this middle part of verse 3. But his soul is not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say, better the miscarriage than he. Here's a man whose life is filled with good things, and he doesn't enjoy them. His life is not filled with the pleasure that he should be able to experience because he doesn't know the giver of all the good gifts. Amen. I wanted to give an illustration of this. A man, for example, who loves, I used food last time. Let's use music. A man who loves wonderful music. And he could travel to Europe. And he could personally buy tickets and hear the Vienna Philharmonic. That's a picture of them. This morning I mentioned one of our string players. I really enjoyed during the Christmas program that the choir was wonderful, all the instruments were wonderful, and there was, I even forget what song it was, but the strings came in, and I just looked over there and thought, that's beautiful. What would it be like to be somebody who enjoys classical music and can travel all the way to Vienna and get there and find out somehow he can't hear anymore? And we would be thinking, wow, that guy just jumps in a plane, flies where he wants, goes to any concert he wants. It must be nice to be that guy. Oh, really? But what if he can't hear? That's an illustration of what it's like to have everything this world offers, but not know Christ, not know the giver of the good gifts. Now, that was my illustration. That's pretty mild. Solomon wants us to understand this. He's going to use a much more shocking illustration. So number one, vanity, having it all yet enjoying none of it. Number two, principle, better not to have it than to have it and not enjoy it. Here's the illustration Solomon uses, and this is pretty radical. Who is better off? I put a picture up of a scale, if that helps. Solomon is going to help us think about two different people. And then he's going to ask the question, which one is better off? We start here with verse 3. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they be, but his soul's not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial. Let's pause. Ancient tradition says there's three things you need to be happy: wealth, long life, and children. So here is Solomon saying, okay, let's talk about it. Verse 3. Let's say a man has 100 children. And obviously that would be incredible. That would be wonderful in that sense. How about his life? He lives many years. But the verse continues. But his soul is not satisfied with good things. And he does not even have a proper burial. Here's a guy who has everything, but enjoys none of it. That's one side of the scale. What's on the other side? Verse 3, the end of verse 3. Then I say, better the miscarriage than he. It would be better to be miscarried. It would be better that you would have never entered this world alive than to go through this world and have all of these things and enjoy none of it. Better the miscarriage than he. Verse 4. For it comes in futility. Now, in my New American Standard, the word futility, many of you have an ESV. That's our word hevel. That's our word vanity. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. That person who is miscarried comes in vanity. Just not even alive. And then verse 4, goes into obscurity, into the darkness. and his name is covered in obscurity. This is a person, notice verse 5, who never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. Who would you rather be? Who would you rather be? You could have anything you want in this world, but you don't have Christ, which means you can't enjoy it. Or you could be a miscarriage. Solomon says, I know the answer, miscarriage. That's how sad it is to go through this life, to have all of these things that God gives us. You've heard this before. It's like having the can of peaches, but you don't have the can opener, and you can't enjoy it. And all you can do is lick the label of the can. What fun is that? That's the place every unsaved person finds himself in. That's what Solomon wants us to understand. And he is so intent on us getting this, he's going to actually expand the illustration. One more verse, verse 6. Even if the man, the other man, the guy back in verse 3 who had 100 children and lived many years, verse 6. Even if that man lives 1,000 years, twice, and does not enjoy good things. Do not all go to one place. He dies. He enjoyed none of it. No matter what a person has. If he doesn't know the Lord who's given him those gifts, he can't find joy in it. So what good is it? Do you see how this will impact the way you think about life? Beloved, we so often struggle with, man, that guy has so much stuff. Yeah, he has warehouses with cans of peaches. But he doesn't have a can opener, so who cares? So what? Why would you envy him? Why would you struggle with, Lord, it doesn't seem fair? That's only a struggle if we believe that things bring happiness. But once we come to the realization that Solomon wants us to understand, then we are free to come to the reality that we're going to see here in verse 7 and verse 8. Okay? So number one, there's a vanity, having it all yet enjoying none of it. Number two, the principle, it's better not to have it than not enjoy it. Number three, the illustration, who's better off? And now we're ready for the reality. Number four, the things we work for can't satisfy. Notice verse 7 and 8. All of a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? What advantage does the poor man have knowing how to walk before the living? And if you think, well, it is better to be wise than foolish, well, maybe in some ways, perhaps. But if you think about it, back to the beginning of the text here in verse 7, we work to eat. Why? So we're strong enough to keep working, to make enough food so we can eat, so we can keep working, so we can eat, so we can keep working, so we can eat. What good is it? Not finding satisfaction in any of the things that we get. Because satisfaction is separate. It's a separate gift. And this is where we need to go back to chapter 5. And Solomon is assuming we remember something. I'll put it up on the screen. Here's a picture of a man working and finding no satisfaction in it. Why? Because he has the gift. He has the money, he has the things, but he doesn't have the gift of enjoyment. It's put this way in 5:19 of Ecclesiastes. I read it from the NIV. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions, comma, key phrase, and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift from God. And our world is filled with people. And they have wealth, and they have possessions, and they don't have the ability to enjoy them. And they go through this life frustrated. Because they don't know the giver of the good gifts, right? Remember, Ecclesiastes keeps driving us to a conclusion. I'll remind us of that in chapter 12, verse 13. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God. Worship God, we could say. And keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. That's what Solomon is helping us to understand. So what have we seen so far tonight? Four things. Vanity. Having it all, yet enjoying none of it. That's verses 1 and 2. And it's a horrible thing. So what's the principle? Number 2, better not to have it than to have it and not enjoy it. Illustration, who's better off? Well, Solomon made that clear. The reality, number 4, is the things we work for can't satisfy. You say, okay, Greg, so what is the practical application? Solomon wants us to understand something. I call this number 5, counsel. It's better to enjoy what you have than wish for what you don't. That's verse 9. What the eyes see, that would be the idea, what the eyes see, because it's yours and you own it. What the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and striving after wind. So here's the idea that Solomon wants us to understand. This is his counsel to us. That we should come to the place where we say, okay, this is what my eyes see, verse 9. This is what I have. And I will worship the one who gave it to me. And I will enjoy it as a gift. Rather than coveting what the next guy has. Maybe represented in this kind of simple drawing, right? Here's a man in a modest home with a modest vehicle, right? Coveting, gazing at this very, very nice house and in front of it, a very, very nice car. And rather than enjoying what he has as a gift from the giver of good gifts, he spends his time coveting what he doesn't have. And that's what life is like. And that's the person who says, Lord, let's call this guy a Christian, a believer, right? Let's call this guy a Christian. That's the guy who struggles with, Greg, life is not fair. Man, I worship God and I live for Him and I don't have a lot of stuff. And there's so many wicked people and they have so much stuff. And as long as you believe that stuff will make you happy, you're going to struggle with that. Solomon says, you shouldn't struggle. Because the reality is that these things that you work for can't satisfy you. It's better to enjoy what you have than to wish for what you don't have. So we have come down to the end of this text, beginning in verse 10, and that brings us to a conclusion. Okay, real quick overview. There's the vanity, having it all yet enjoying none of it. Number 2, the principle, better not to have it than not enjoy it. Number 3, an illustration, who's better off? The miscarriage. Number 4, the reality, the things we work for can't satisfy. Number 5, here's Solomon's counsel, better to enjoy what you have than wish for what you don't have. And here's the conclusion, submit to God's sovereignty. And if you're wondering, how did you get that sovereignty again? Submit to God's sovereignty. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up, and we'll be looking at verse 10 and 11 and verse 12, please. Verse 10. Whatever exists has already been named, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. Now, I look at that verse, and I think, I'm not exactly sure what's going on there, okay? Whatever exists has already been named. Okay, so in the ancient world, to name something was to have authority. If you named something, you were sovereign over it, right? So Adam is allowed to name or required to name the animals because man is sovereign over creation, okay, in that sense. So back to verse 10. Whatever exists has already been named, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. There's someone who is stronger than us. You say, who is that? That's the Lord. I'm going to put up the Holman Christian Standard Bible translation of verse 10. And notice the capital letter they use. Whatever exists was given its name long ago, and it is known what man is, but he, man, is not able to contend with the one, capital O, stronger than he. Who am I to contend with God? Who am I to complain to God, Lord, he has so much stuff, and I don't have as much stuff. It just doesn't seem fair. And Solomon is saying, you should never do that. God rules. God knows what he's doing. God gives to some people so much, even though they don't know him. And they don't really have the ability to enjoy it. But that's what God does. And we need to be okay with whatever God does, because he's God and we're not. That's verse 10. Now, verse 11. For there are many words which increase futility. What then is the advantage to a man? You say, what's going on there? You can talk about it all you want, but it's just talk. Why spend your time talking about all of the stuff that other people have that they can't enjoy apart from Christ? And keep talking about why does God do what he does? I'll put it from the NIV, Ecclesiastes 6, verse 11. This helped me. The more the words, the less the meaning. And how does that profit anyone? If I could put this in the paraphrase again, guys, God knows what he's doing. And what I think of what he's doing doesn't matter. So why don't we just accept God's sovereignty and realize that, yes, he is God. He is sovereign. He knows what he's doing. And then we go on here to verse 12. For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime, during the few years of his futile. There it is again. That's our word hevel. That's our word vanity. Who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime, during the few vain years of his life? It's like a shadow. You know, the sun comes out and there's a shadow and it moves. And the next thing you know, the shadow is gone. And that's our life. And how do we know what is good during this life? We don't. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? I don't know what's going to happen after this message is over, let alone after my life is over. Nor do you. But God does. And what the Lord is helping us to understand through Solomon is we need to submit to God's sovereign plan. Greg, why are there some believers who have, it seems, so little of this world's goods? I would say, I don't know. But I would also quickly say they're enjoying what they have because they know the giver of the good gifts. They might only have one small can of peaches, but they have a can opener. Praise God. And why does God give truckloads of peaches to people who don't know him? I don't know. But they don't enjoy it. If you believe Ecclesiastes. It's like going to the best restaurant with no taste buds. Going to the Philharmonic and your ears don't work. It's like having everything, but you can't enjoy it. I mean, I close with an illustration tonight of a couple some of you may recognize. Look at this picture. Here is a gentleman who's handsome, physically fit, buff. He's also absolutely incredibly wealthy. And he was world famous in 1978 when the critically acclaimed Superman movie came out. Married to a beautiful woman picture there in 1992. How many of us would say he has everything? Man, I would change places with him in a moment. Would you? Because you know where I'm going. It's only like 2 years after he's married. He loved to ride horses. That Christopher Reeve is thrown from the horse and his neck is severed. And he becomes a quadriplegic and he can't even breathe without a ventilator. And he spends the rest of his life with a portable ventilator, going around breathing into a little straw that dictates where his motorized chair can go. And then would you say, beloved, I wish I had what he had. And we would say, no, no. But that's a picture of every person apart from Christ. And you say, but even how about after he passes away, Greg? What does his beautiful wife enjoy? I believe 2 more years of life before she was stricken with lung cancer and she died, even though she never smoked a day in her life. Beloved, that is what it, and I say this, I mean no disrespect to them. I know nothing else about what they believed. I hope they knew Christ. It's an illustration of an incredibly attractive couple that would have absolutely everything most people in this world long for. And then he comes to the place where he can enjoy none of it. That is reality for most people in this world. That's what Solomon wants us to understand. And if you're getting a handle on that, you're starting to arrive at a biblical philosophy of life. Here's our summary for tonight. Ecclesiastes chapter 6. I think this is a great summary. It's not original with me as far as applying it to this chapter. Never judge a book by its cover. Number one, many people have everything yet enjoy nothing. Yet enjoy nothing. I see that really expensive car drive by me and you don't have to stop and think, man, that guy must have everything. Instead, we should be thinking, oh, Lord, I hope he has the can opener to the peaches. If I could say it differently, I hope he knows you. I hope he knows Christ, because that's the only way to enjoy the things of this life. Number two, without a can opener, all you can do is lick the label. And that's what our world is filled with. People who are accumulating their cans of peaches, licking the label. And that's truly not enjoyable. Number three, enjoyment is given to those who have good gifts and worship the giver of the gifts. And that is why we end one more time with Ecclesiastes 12:13. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God or worship God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. If you worship Christ, if you know the true meaning of Christmas, if you've turned from your sin and you have put faith in the Lord, you know the giver of good gifts, you should be having a life of joy. And I know some people would say, you know, the Christian life is turning your back on joy and suffering for Jesus. I would say, go and read Ecclesiastes and we'll talk about it. Because that's not what I'm reading in my Bible. The Christian life is a life of joy, because we are the ones, regardless of how small our can of peaches may be, we have the can opener. We know Christ. We know the one who gives us these gifts. And in our relationship with Christ, we have the ability to enjoy. If you're going through life and life is just absolutely horrible, and if I were to ask, you know, whoever, I don't know, your family, your friends, your neighbors, is this guy happy? And if the people who know you would say, no, that's a problem. That's a problem. If you don't know Christ, well, then of course you're not happy. Come to Christ. But if you know Christ, maybe without realizing it, you've bought into an unbiblical philosophy of life. And by God's grace, he brought you here tonight to help you realize what is true. That good times are not necessarily good. And the only people who have the ability to enjoy the gifts of this world are the people who know the giver of the good gifts. So if you are a believer, and yet, to be honest, you would say there's very little joy in your life, I would ask you, and I say this in a compassionate way, in a way that wants to help you, not in a way to make you feel bad. What are you worshiping? Because if you're worshiping Christ, then there would be the fruit of the Spirit in your life. Love, joy, peace. But if that's not characteristic of my life, then one possibility is I don't know the giver of the good gifts. I have the peaches, not the can opener. And then we would say, come to Christ. Or maybe I'm worshiping the wrong gifts. I'm trusting in the gifts for happiness rather than looking to the giver of the gifts. I think this is an absolutely awesome chapter. This chapter is just helping me in my mind to think, Lord, I think I'm starting to think more biblically about life. This is helping me. And I thank you for Ecclesiastes. And by God's grace, I hope it's having that effect in your life as well.